there were other issues in the 60s. Civil rights movement would have been underway, actually, in the late 50s. And when you came nationally in 1960, four black students from North Carolina began a sit-in at the segregated Woolworths lunch counter. We have the Freedom Riders, as they were called, were attacked by angry mobs along the way. So it obviously was national news. In 62, James Meredith became the first black student to enroll at the University of Mississippi. So it was very much on the minds of the nation. Set the scene in Tulsa, as you saw it, in the treatment of blacks.
The first week I arrived in Tulsa, I took my BD and my biographical stuff down to the paper. It was in the old World Tribune building. And an African-American man, an old man, he's probably 45, but you know, I was young, opened the door for me and said, "Good morning, Massa." I almost went through the deck. I wasn't prepared for this. Somebody had told me that Tulsa was a many-splendored thing. It had a large international community. We were loaded with geological PhDs. It was Middle Western more than it was Southwestern in many ways. And it sure as heck was Southwestern and the oil business and at all, but it was Old South too. And nobody had mentioned there was a race riot. And it took several years before somebody said, "You know, John, we don't talk about these things. We had a race riot." I said, "We did." But that first week, all Brookside, whites and blacks, toilets, that sort of stuff.
Jim Crow law.
Jim Crow law. Second law passed by the legislature in this state was Jim Crow. Tulsa was loaded with it. Barbershops, restaurants, all over the place. I started May the 1st, 1960. Sometime that next month or two, May or June, possibly July, the high school group in my congregation said, "We're going over and sit in Oklahoma City. You should go with us." So I did. I went with them. And Claire Looper went over to that black church and got all the instruction of what she was supposed to do with the sit-ins. And we sat in over there.
Where did you go?
I can't remember the name of the cafeteria, but there was a cafeteria over there where we went, and I almost got arrested. And then it dawned on me I should have called my colleague over there and tell him I was coming to get arrested in his town. But I didn't until later. Then I came back here. The Psychiatric Foundation had just opened its doors that year. And they had organized a thing called the Ministerial Clergy Groups, in which they met one psychiatrist or psychologist or counselor with 10 ministers, trying to get some backing from the ministerial community. Because Freud was as big a no-no as Darwin, you know, in Tulsa. So they were attempting to get the clergy, and I joined a clergy group. Gil Karras was the head of that group, and I was in his group. Also in that group was a guy by the name of Clarence Canepa, Grace Lutheran Church. Bob Ball from John Knox Presbyterian, and somebody else, I've forgotten his name now, but he was a Memorial Methodist church, and a Pentecostal minister who was among this group, and that was my introduction. They had already started, at that point, forming a kind of a organization about public accommodations ordinance. It was in this group that I was introduced to some of my colleagues in this town. They had already started. I ended up going with Clarence and Norbert Rosenthal from Temple Israel, and I've forgotten who else. We ended up in a nunnery at the Benedictine Heights College in those days. Mother Celine and Sister Mary Mark had this bunch of clergy in from the NCCJ. We sat in that living room in the convent and started a petition for public accommodation. Before we were done, we got 75 clergy from this town supporting public accommodations ordinance, which I thought was spectacular. That's when I first began to think something about the clergy in this town is really good. Well, Beth Macklin, that was a clue. That happened a little bit later. But that was a great bunch of people.
Do you remember if there were one or two clergy who said, "No, I will not sign that"? Or was it pretty?
I'm sure there were.
Okay, but you didn't know.
I knew the ones that were. That was the first time All Souls Church ever passed a motion by the whole congregation in favor of something in the community. The whole congregation, they voted unanimously to support it.
Was that happening in Oklahoma City, too, or did that start here?
No, that started here. That was ours. I remember I got into a big debate at Temple Israel with Borden's Cafeteria,
Borden's,
whoever owned it. And we just went at it, debate.
People from Borden's?
The owner. Yeah.
And you would have a public debate about it.
Yeah.
And he was stating what?
That they had a right to exclude whoever they want.
Refuse service on the basis of race.
Many years later, he joined All Souls.
Did you ever have a discussion? I was wrong that day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was a moment. But that was the first. Two or three things had happened. The kids, the high school group, grabbed me. The other one was Francis Campbell. And Allie Beth Martin was the librarian, head of the library. They had me before I even had my feet on the ground joining the United Nations Association. And I was 2 years running the UN Week chairman here. I remember I got Jim Hughley to come.
The mayor at the time?
The mayor at the time. And I never let him forget this. Years and years later, we became great friends. And Jim said, "Now, John, what is this UN thing?" Anyway.
Well, this was at a time when Oklahomans saw the UN as a communist plot.
Tell me about it. You bet they did. We had a little debate in the congregation because one of the members of the congregation was the head of Get the UN Out of the U.S. Committee. We had them all right there. I wasn't preaching to the choir. I had people I could preach to in my own congregation.